From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Hey everybody, welcome to SpongeBob Binge Pants. I'm Hector. We're so happy that you're here. Happy holidays, Merry Xmas. In case you haven't done it already, this is the perfect time of the year to go back and revisit some of your favorite SpongeBob episodes that maybe put you in the festive spirit. Might I recommend the classic season 2 episode, Christmas Who? With a question mark, that's the one where Sandy Cheeks teaches SpongeBob about Christmas traditions. It's lovely. Perfect time to get your friends and family together and rewatch some of your favorite holiday-themed SpongeBob episodes. Today, we've got a very special treat for you. We are showing you a classic episode of the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, where I, Hector, actually had the distinct honor of talking with the supervising producers and showrunners of SpongeBob SquarePants, Vince Waller and Mark Ceccarelli. This was a fantastic interview, and you know what? So much has changed in the SpongeBob universe since I had a chance to talk to these two brilliant gentlemen. This is a great, great talk. I loved learning about their backstory, their history with animation as a whole. So we really hope that you enjoy today's episode of SpongeBob Binge Pants.
Nick, 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 Nick,
Nickelodeon!
Nickelodeon Animation in Burbank, California. This is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hi, I'm your host, Hector Navarro. Welcome to the podcast. Today, we're going to talk about something absorbent, something yellow, something porous, something spongy. That's right, we're diving deep, deep to get to Bikini Bottom and into the worldwide phenomenon that is SpongeBob SquarePants. For this behind-the-scenes look at the sponge, we're talking to supervising producers and showrunners Vince Waller and Mark Ceccarelli to have them tell us how the heck they keep things fresh after 10 seasons and 200 episodes. Are you ready, kids? I can't hear you! Guys, thank you so much for coming in. This is going
to
be a lot of fun.
When you were a kid, did you decide, I think I want to work in animation? Where did it start?
Well, for me, even though I was completely enamored with Warner Brothers cartoons and watching them, you know, on the three times a day that we had access to them,
yeah,
whatever came up, I was just glued to the set, whether it was Sniffles or whether, you know, it was some wild Bob Clampett cartoon with people getting shot in the face. But it never occurred to me at that point that I might actually end up in animation. I was at that point, you know, because they were already starting to ship stuff overseas, and they were, you know, everybody was like, well, they don't even do that here in the States anymore. And
yeah.
I'm from Texas, if you can't tell by that. So I didn't really have high hopes of doing that. And I wasn't even sure that I was going to end up in the art field. I started in the business doing caricatures at Six Flags Over Texas for basically a dollar drawing. But through that, I met people in comic books.
The yeah.
comic books led to animation, and then here.
What comic books did you do?
My friend Bob Camp, who was also in animation, everybody knows him, worked on Ren and Stimpy. He got hired at Crazy Magazine, whose editor was Larry Hama. Larry Hama also did Savage Sword of Conan, yeah. Savage Tales, basically G.I. Joe's.
Yes.
He, you know, pretty much invented G.I. Joe. I just started sending him drawings and I bugged him with drawings for about 2 years with him just sending back notes saying, well, this is stupid and this doesn't make sense and this is that you should do, this is too flat and whatever. And then one day he bought one. And actually, when he bought it, I had come to California to try to break into animation and found that I had no portfolio. I had barely, very little skills, so I ended up washing pots at the Huntington Sheraton. But I was sending Larry my stuff, and he bought one of my pinups, and that was pretty much all it took for me to go, I think maybe I'll go to New York and see if I can live there.
And then you went to New York.
I went to New York.
How long were you in New York?
7 years from when I got there wow. till when Bob and I then moved towards animation.
So right when you felt like you were a New Yorker, you moved out of there?
Yes. I got the flavor for it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, but it was... For the first couple of years I was there, it was like, well, Vincent, what are you going to have today, a sandwich or a thing of Haagen-Dazs? These are your choices. So it's not the easiest town in the world to live in if you're not yeah. rolling in bucks.
Absolutely. Mark, what about you? What kind of stuff did you love as a kid, first of all? What'd you love?
Well, probably my first big cartoon love was Popeye.
Yeah.
I grew up in Bakersfield, but we would get a channel from L.A. called KTLA, yeah. Channel 5.
Mm-hmm.
And every Sunday, there was a three-hour block of Popeye cartoons. and of course, I loved Disney.
Sure.
I loved all the Disney cartoons growing up. I think that was, you know, I was tended to be like drawn towards the more physical comedy type of cartoons. So it was generally the more classic cartoons that I was into. During my teenage years, I got more into like horror films and,
yeah.
and you know, surreal films, directors like, you know, Alejandro Jodorowsky and mm-hmm. David Lynch and, you know, all the really weird guys. And
yeah.
So then I went to CalArts as in the live action program, not in the animation program.
Oh, cool. Yeah. But did you make the switch there at CalArts or?
Well, when I was at CalArts, there was a job posting on the job board for somebody was looking for somebody who knew how to make puppets. And I worked a lot with puppets and sculpting and effects type stuff. And that person happened to be Doug Lawrence, Mr. Lawrence. And at the time, he was...
if you don't know.
Yeah. At the time, I think he was working on Rocko's Modern Life. And, you know, I kept in touch with him and worked on shorts with him over the years, doing stuff with him. And eventually, I started editing his shorts. And then... he was sort of like my backdoor into animation.
Cool.
So, yeah, I got sidetracked for about 10 or 15 years. I ended up working for a company called Don Post Studios, sculpting Halloween masks, designing and sculpting Halloween masks.
Making the things that I used to look in the back of horror magazines and go, I wish I had the money to buy that one. Oh, I really wish I had the money to buy that one.
I've probably worn your work on my face. Cool. So thanks. Vince, you were on Ren and Stimpy.
I was.
How did you get on Ren and Stimpy? Was that through New York? Was that in L.A.? When did that happen?
No, that was in L.A. I'd been working at Deke on a show called The Real Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And on the same floor, John Crisfalusi and my friend Bob Camp were working on Beanie and Cecil, which was for Deke. And about 6 months into that production, they actually walked in and told everybody to put their pencils down, and they all left. They were all fired.
Wow.
Then Bob and John and Jim Smith, Len Naylor, Jim Gomez all started Spumco, where they were trying to pitch these cartoon ideas. And then at some point, they pitched their cartoon to Vanessa Coffey, and she's like, well, these are all nice, but I like these two guys. Who are these two guys? And
yeah.
She was pointing at Ren and Stimpy down in the corner, and he said, well, that's Ren Hoek and Stimpson and J-Cat. They got the pilot. And I knew they were working on the pilot. And one day I went over to John's house for one of his parties, and there was a George Licker storyboard there, one that never got made, of George Licker taking Ren and Stimpy hunting. And during the party, in my most inebriated fashion, I went through the storyboard and basically pitched it out loud. And the next day I got a phone call, and I was like, ring, ring, pick it up. It's like, yeah. He's like, hey, it's John. I was like, John Kay? He's like, yeah, John. He's like, you're funny. You want a job? He's like, yes, yes, please, I want a job. Please let me go work on cartoons.
That is where I need to be. That's hilarious. So talking about the long history of SpongeBob SquarePants and its origins and where it came from, a lot of that original crew came from Ren and Stimpy,
yep.
came from Rocko's Modern Life. How do you guys think that those shows influence the style of SpongeBob?
Other than the fact that they were all cartoonists that were just up until Ren and Stimpy, when you were a cartoonist and you were working in animation, pretty much someone handed you a script and
yeah.
they said, draw this exactly the way it's written,
mm-hmm.
don't change anything, and then I'll give you notes on it after we're done.
Yeah.
So after the Spumco thing, that was cartoonists actually being trusted to tell a story, trusted to do their job.
Yeah.
And I think that empowered a whole lot of people that kind of expanded exponentially from Spumco and bled into, you know, all, you know, because that just naturally attracts good people that want to tell a story. So I think, you know, a lot of when Spumco ended, a lot of, you know, those people had branched out, and it was just fortuitous that they had were able to hone their chops as far as learning storytelling, whatever, you know, natural abilities they had already, that, you know, they just, if you actually get to do it, you get better at it. And I think it was just, you know, right at the right moment when those people went on to the SpongeBob crew, met with Steve and his little idea that developed from, you know, when he was going to be a marine biologist teaching kids what algae was with SpongeBoy.
Boy. Mark, you are relatively newer to the SpongeBob family. You came in around 2011, is that right?
2010-ish.
2010-ish. Yeah. Do you remember where you were when you first heard of SpongeBob SquarePants? Like, what did you see? What did you think of it? What did you make of it as a sort of outsider looking
at
it?
Yeah, I always stayed interested in cartoons. You know, that never went away.
Of course.
So,
it doesn't go away.
Yeah. So I kept up on, like, the cartoons that I liked. I mean, Ren and Stimpy was so inspirational. I mean, when I was at CalArts in the live action program, I was like, so, like, envious of everybody in the animation program. I think I made a mistake. You know, because that was around the time that Ren and Stimpy dropped, and it was like, it just blew my mind.
That's crazy.
Like, to think that they could actually still make cartoons, you know, now like they used to.
Was that the vibe at CalArts too? Is that what people were kind of talking about and stuff?
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, you could see a lot of people like heavily influenced by Ren and Stimpy on the walls.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, we started getting lots of portfolios full of drawings of eyes bugged extreme. It's like every pose was a giant take, and it's like, I know that's what you think we're doing, and that's great that you can do that, but we need to do the stuff before that too.
Yeah.
You have to do a calm drawing that's also appealing.
When I was at CalArts my last year there, there was a job posting for Ren and Stimpy on the wall.
Oh, man.
And you know, I had always still drawn, so I got a bunch of my little doodles, like, that I thought were within the realm of the Ren Stimpy world, and I went down to you know, Kinko's and copied them all and put them in an envelope and sent them there, not thinking anything would happen. And I came home to the apartment one day, and there was a call on my answering machine, and it was from Vincent.
No way.
Yeah, and he's...
Did you know this?
Did you tell me this?
I think I have, but
okay,
it was from Vincent. He says, you know, this is Vincent Waller on Ren Stimpy. We really like your, and I guess I can't say it on here, but he said, your effing drawings. But we're not hiring right now. But it was such a great thing,
man,
that he took the time out to actually call me and, you know, tell me
because we really liked his effing drawings.
Yeah.
Everybody in the world at this point has at least seen an episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. How do you guys go about making an actual episode step by step? What are the processes? How do we do it?
It starts in a room full of crazy cartoonists that basically just sit around and go, okay, what have we not done? What can we do next? And start bouncing ideas around. And we, you know, write them on little cards, just like every writer group, and stick them on the board. And some of them, you go look at them months later and go, what the heck were we thinking when we even said those words out loud? But that's how you get to the gyms, by, you know, digging deep and pulling up everything. Well, maybe.
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of times there'll be like orphaned cards on the wall that, you know, we're like, what was that one
we don't
idea? It's like, there'll be like two words, you know, that are supposed to like sort of like describe the idea, like a title or something.
Yeah.
And we'll all be going like, what was that idea? What does that open up to? And nobody can remember.
Yeah, obviously these two words weren't going to be enough to sell it.
Yeah.
There's just no context. It's just random like words that you're like, we don't remember what that was.
Yeah.
That's
but
so
when
funny.
We do find one, when we do find one that sounds like it will actually have legs, we then roll out the whiteboard and usually make Doug Lawrence or Mark, because Mark, when he writes it, he makes sure that the lines don't dip down to the right. That ends up taking up most of your whiteboard with trying to fix everything.
Just as they're just falling down,
yes.
down.
Yeah. So Mark has he can be a little anal about that, so it goes a little straighter, and it's much
nice.
More clear. But it's
nice.
Either him or Doug usually. I've done it a couple of times, but I hate being up there and having to like distill everybody's thoughts and then put it into a line. But they're both very good at it. And then we just start building the story back and forth. And, you know, well, they could do this. They could do this.
Collaboratively, everybody in the room throwing that together. At what point do you guys go, okay, this is the story? Do you have like a certain structure that you're trying to fill out? You go, okay, well, this is our, you know, we have like a three-act structure.
Yep.
And this is how SpongeBob does it.
That's basically it.
Okay.
It's for 11 minutes, it's a very short three-act structure.
You have all that. Then what happens? Do you assign it to a writer? What's the next step?
We take a picture of the board just in case anybody comes in and erases it and we don't remember it. And then, sometimes we assign it. Sometimes it's just who's up next as far as, you know, has available time to sit and figure it out and make it into a solid piece of work. Or if someone is particularly drawn to it, sometimes if it was their idea, You know, they would like to chase it to the end.
This is a zany, crazy show, obviously, but there's still rules. Like, what are some of those rules?
I think those are a lot of the rules in SpongeBob are character-based rules. Like, this character wouldn't do this. This is out of his character. Because, you know, SpongeBob's has very strong characters. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so successful and it's lasted as long as it has. And so most of the rules are character-based rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, because obviously we don't have a lot of physical types of rules in the
totally,
show because
yeah.
It's a surreal show.
Yeah, it's really just things that don't ring true with character. That oftentimes, you know, somebody will have SpongeBob doing something and it's like, can you make him not look like he's mad when he's doing that? Because
yeah.
He doesn't really have, I mean, he gets mad, but it's never pointed at somebody. His
yeah.
His anger is, you know, it's not, it's diffused. It's a general, you know, thing, a very specific thing that's getting him upset, but he would never turn and go, "You're a bastard." and sometimes the people will draw expressions on him that look like that and go,
yeah.
If you just soften that up so that it's more an internal thing he's feeling. Whereas Patrick, you can, you know, make him get mad at anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Squidward, you can obviously make him get mad.
That's
at
one
anybody.
Of the great things about SpongeBob is that characters are so different that, you know, if you write a gag for a character and it doesn't work for them, you can, a lot of times you can like transplant it onto another character
yeah.
that it does work with.
Happy birthday, Squidward!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, cake!
Happy birthday!
Pin the tail on the seahorse!
So long, Squidward! Bye-bye! I don't do anything I would do!
Now that you're older!
It's not my birthday!
Who's your favorite character?
To draw is probably Patrick and Plankton, because they are the quickest and the easiest. But honestly, it fluctuates. I like them all for different reasons, yeah. You know, working with Sandy, you know, being as she's from Texas, too, because
yeah.
We all started there. So I have an affinity for her character, but even though she is really hard to draw in that suit.
I guess for me, it's SpongeBob. I love SpongeBob.
Yeah.
He's so malleable. You know, he's the guy who can, like, transform the most.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, drawing him is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Sandy as well. What I like about Sandy is she's like this, she's supposed to be this rational center of the show.
Yeah.
So very often we can like make her go crazy and
yes.
It's extra funny
yeah.
when she goes crazy.
Just talking about comedy in general, mm-hmm. when I tell people about how difficult it is to play like a dumb character, I think it's very difficult to do and pull off. And Patrick he's
yeah.
all time.
And if you ever get a chance, if you haven't done it, come in and watch him in that room over there. They put him inside that room because Bill can be a little gassy. It's actually just so that he and Tom don't talk over each other. But we put him in the room over there and you can see Bill. When he stands in front of the microphone, it's like, first off, if you don't know Bill Fagerbakke, he is 6'5" at least. And when he's getting ready to do Patrick, he stands there and it's like sometimes his arms go up. He's like,
I never would have guessed.
Now will you show me what's inside your secret box?
No, SpongeBob. It's for me to know and for you to never find out. You may be an open book, SpongeBob, but I'm a bit more complicated than that. The inner machinations of my mind are an enigma.
SpongeBob was a board-driven show, and now it's a script-driven show.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, first of all, what's the difference between those two, and how and why did SpongeBob kind of make the switch?
The way cartoons were originally made, they were made by cartoonists. Because it's a visual medium. And when you tend to write a story in a board form, when you go straight to the drawings, you come up with more visual gags. People who write scripts tend to be very wordy, you know? And it's also really odd in animation for people to want to go into animation as script writers.
Yeah.
You know, most people enter animation drawing. So a lot of people who write scripts in animation tend to be people who are slumming it.
On their way to somewhere.
Yeah, like people who want to write for sitcoms or...
Got it.
Recently, we had to find a new writer, and we got, you know, a stack of submissions, a giant stack of submissions.
About a foot and a half high stack.
Yeah.
What Mark was just showing with his hands.
Yeah. And you know, they were all like dialogue heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who write scripts have a hard time describing visual gags. Really, all the cartoons that I've been drawn to
yeah.
have come from a board writing place. And we recently switched over to scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our script writers actually come from board writing. And we won't start a story if it doesn't have a really good visual hook to hang the story on.
Yeah.
Like if it doesn't seem like a story that's going to open up to a lot of visual gag type possibilities, then we tend to like push that one aside
for one that
has a good visual hook.
At what point is the script ready? Then what happens after that?
Well, we skipped a couple. We go from whiteboard to premise, and then we throw the premise up the line to make sure that Nickelodeon doesn't have any like problems with the story. If they like the story, then they go ahead.
That's usually like about one or two paragraphs to describe the story.
Just the high points.
Just to get that approval, and then from there, let's go script.
Then we flesh out an outline to make sure it's all there, and then we go script.
And then from the okay, great.
The outlines are usually about 3 pages long. They're broken into 3-act structure, and then we take those outlines and we pore over them and we make changes. All the writers together.
It's a group grope.
We just go through it, and anything that bugs any of us, we voice the concern to the room. It's a very democratic process on our show. It's a room full of funny guys. Yeah, so.
Who can make who laugh the loudest?
Man, those people will laugh at anything. Hey, don't sweat it, kid. I got them all warmed up for you.
Put your fins together for SpongeBob SquarePants!
Ladies and jellyfish, have you ever noticed salt shakers? I mean, you fill them up every night at closing, and I mean, where does it all go? Huh? You know what I mean?
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
Hey, funny guy, I got a joke for you! What smells rotten and puts people to sleep?
Noxious gas?
No! Your axe!
And there you have it, everybody. That was just part one of my amazing interview with Vince Waller and Mark Ceccarelli. You have to come back next week for part two. It is so, so good and so unbelievably cool to be able to listen to these geniuses talk about how the show was made then and really be thinking about how the show is made today. Honestly, pretty much the same. The only difference is there's more shows. There's just more stuff that they're doing. I've said this before and I will say it again. SpongeBob Binge Pants has allowed me and Frankie to meet people who work on the show, and we've realized they are exactly the perfect people to work on SpongeBob SquarePants. And this, of course, is no different. Mark and Vince, thank you guys once again for your time from, in the future, from back in the day, from the past, and anyway, whatever, my head hurts. But please come back next week, and in the meantime, have a fantastic rest of your holidays. Enjoy the time with your loved ones. Hug your friends. Hug your family. Tell them that you care about them. And we'll see you guys in a week for part two on SpongeBob Binge Pants. Bye.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready to explore like never before.
Swiper, no swiping.
Oh, man.
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woo-hoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure. On the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we've got this.
Todos juntos!
Yeah!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount+.